From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie and welcome to Coast AM. Later tonight, the Friday Night Frolic. That's right, those open lines. Here's what's happening. North Korea, there's something wrong with those people. North Korea has announced that it has now detained a U.S. citizen who, it says, entered the secretive country as a tourist in April and simply broke the law. The news brings the number of Americans believed to be held in the communist nation now to three. The North state-run Korean Central News Agency reported that the authorities are investigating a man who, it said, violated the law by acting contrary to the purpose of tourism. Unbelievable. U.S. State Department is working on that one, too. Why would anybody want to go to North Korea? The man accused of opening fire at a Seattle college had a fascination with school shootings, telling investigators that he had once visited Columbine High School. According to the unnamed police source, the suspect admitted to the attack and told police he wanted to shoot up a school. 26-year-old was ordered held without bail in connection with the shooting at the Seattle Pacific University, left one person dead and two wounded in that tragedy. Renowned radio personality Casey Kasem in a hospital in Western Washington, according to a spokesperson there. He is alert, appears to be comfortable. The 82-year-old former host of America's Top 40, and Casey's Top 40, is receiving antibiotics through IVs, blood pressure support medicine, and care for his bed sores. He was admitted to the hospital after one of his daughters and an ambulance crew retrieved him from a home where he and his wife were staying with friends. Any further updates on Casey Kasem's condition will be made at the discretion and approval of his children. The United States added 217,000 jobs in May as labor markets seem to be gaining the kind of sustained momentum that has grown elusive as the economy has struggled to recover from the 2008 financial crisis. The unemployment rate was still 6.3%. According to the Labor Department, the rate is the same as in April. 288,000 jobs created then. That's far more than had been expected. Remember the work of Zechariah Sitchin, where he talked about, of course, the 12th planet. He believes there's an extra planet in the solar system, that the Anunnaki came here, seeded us. But in his work of the Earth Chronicles, the late Zechariah Sitchin talked about how an object, a planetary-sized object, collided with planet Earth. Now, he wrote about this based on what he was able to decipher from old language from Sumeria, which is now the modern-day Iraq. It's an incredible story. Was he right? Well, listen to this. Researchers have found evidence of the world that crashed into the Earth billions of years ago to form the moon. Analysis of lunar rock brought back by Apollo astronauts shows traces of the planet called Theia. The researchers claim that their discovery confirms that the theory that the moon was created by such a collision. The accepted theory since the 1980s is that the moon arose as a result of a collision between Earth and Theia 4.5 billion years ago. Theia was named after a goddess in Greek mythology who is said to be the mother of Selene, goddess of the moon. It is thought to have disintegrated on impact with the resulting debris mingling with that of Earth and coalescing into the moon. Robert Zimmerman, space historian. Robert, it's an incredible story, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, but what's true about this, George, is that scientists, planetary geologists, have theorized that the moon was formed by such a collision with a Mars-sized planet hitting Earth for about 40 years, even before the Apollo landings. The problem they've had for the last 40 years is that the initial geology that came back from the moon after Apollo, they expected the moon to be of a different makeup than from the Earth. If it was caused by a collision, it should be made up of at least 50% of that of the planet, and therefore its composition should be different from the Earth's. But the Apollo geology seemed to match the Earth almost exactly. It's what's happened is there's been a reanalysis of Apollo data, and they think now that they've pinned down the differences in oxygen isotopes, which suggests that, yes, the moon is composed somewhat differently than the Earth, and that, is strong evidence that this theory is true. And once again, there might be, you know, guys who've imagined this in the past as a possibility, but this is what scientists themselves have thought was the most likely explanation for the moon. The fact that the Earth is really, Earth and moon is really the only double planet in the solar system. We don't get moons that big compared to their host planet normally. So this is just finally scientists are beginning to get some real data to prove such a theory.
It is remarkable. And you know, Robert, when I cited Zachariah Sitchin, he passed away a few years ago. He had been on the program a lot with me.
Yeah.
He died at the age of 90, but he was able to decipher Sumerian cuneiforms and these old writings and etchings. And they did talk about a collision. And this thing was made thousands of years ago. They talked about a collision with planet Earth. And I just find that to be amazing.
Well, look, even then, they knew the moon existed and they knew the planets existed. They thought they were stars, but they knew the moon existed. And from their perspective, this is not something that is that hard to imagine. But the evidence, the scientific evidence, is much more interesting to me because now we're finally beginning to pull data together that tells us what's actually happened.
All right, Robert, thanks. And always your website, of course,
behindtheblack.com.
You got that right. Thank you. Great. He's got a couple websites, but behindtheblack.com is his big one. And, of course, what's going on in the skies these days? This is time for our weekly UFO report. Let's check in with Peter Davenport from the National UFO Reporting Center. Busy or quiet week, Peter?
It's a busy week indeed, George, but I'd like to preface by just commenting on how momentous this date was 70 years ago and tipping my hat in the direction of all veterans, you and our listeners and myself as well. Boy, can you imagine what those thousands, hundreds of thousands of troops went through 70 years ago tonight, and I commend them.
No question. Absolutely.
Also, I just returned from high school graduation here in the little city I live in eastern Washington, Harrington, Washington, and I told the seven graduating seniors, one guy and six gals, that I would congratulate them over the air tonight. They did a wonderful job, and
sure,
I have to say, just a wonderful, wonderful group of young people. It's heartening to see such high-quality young people, and I'm sure the same is true of all the graduates across this country who are completing their high school education this month. Some interesting reports from yesterday. At about 10 a.m. Pacific time yesterday afternoon, Thursday the 5th of June, a man and his wife were driving to a medical appointment in Kennewick, Washington, just about 2 hours' drive south of where I am, George. They looked up. They were flabbergasted to see a triangular craft hovering seemingly motionless in the morning sky. As they were watching it, it came to their attention that a dark or black helicopter was flying directly towards it. Suddenly, the object began to move, and it accelerated away from the helicopter and away from them at a blistering pace, they said. About 4 hours later, a gentleman reports he was down in Reno, Nevada, looking at the afternoon sky with a pair of 20-by-80 astronomical binoculars. He was watching aircraft fly over and was just flummoxed to see a group of, he estimated, 5 to 8 objects. They were initially silver in color, but he said you could see a hue of orange on the underside of them streaking in the opposite direction that the aircraft he was looking at was going. He said he's never been so flabbergasted in all his life by a sighting. Just about the same time that sighting was occurring in Reno, Nevada, there was a similar sighting in Fort Lauderdale, Florida at 1700 hours, 5 p.m. East Coast time yesterday. Gentleman was driving slowly in very heavy traffic. He looked up and he saw a silver chevron just streak across the sky. He estimated he didn't see it for more than about 30 seconds or so. He said he has no explanation for what he saw. Last night at 7:30 p.m., two brothers up in Powell River, British Columbia, on the west coast of British Columbia, right across from Vancouver Island, they decided they were going to hike up a nearby hill so they could get a good, clear look at the sunset. They got up there and they looked to the west towards the sun and were flabbergasted to see an orange orb hovering over the nearby city that they had just left. Suddenly, the object just accelerated and disappeared. I wish I understood what these orange objects are, George.
Well, they're baffling to you. I know they are, aren't they?
They have me completely flummoxed. A lot of our listeners, I suspect, are getting bored from hearing about all these orange fireballs. But it's the most compelling phenomenon in ufology today, in my opinion. I've written several articles about the subject for the UFO Journal, the MUFON monthly publication. One more report from last night, Aurora, Colorado, which is just east of downtown Denver. A group of about six people were outside, and they looked to the east, and they saw a cluster of very bright red objects, I believe they described, red or orange. And these objects were unusual because they were leaving behind them trails of sparkling red somethings.
Wow.
They don't know what it was. And we're awaiting one more report from a second group of independent witnesses. I got this report to John Schuessler, the former international director of MUFON, and he's going to follow up on it. And just to close out, we've received a number of very, very interesting and high-quality reports from the Midwest tonight, from Hatfield, Mass. That's in the east, of course, not the Midwest, but from Lynchburg, Tennessee, from Ankeny, Iowa. A mother and daughter were standing outside and saw a very, very bright orange light that suddenly accelerated and shot off. Omaha, Nebraska, and four very bright orange lights from Mentor, Ohio, at about 11:40 p.m. local time.
They are everywhere, Peter, my friend. Peter's website, ufocenter.com. It's amazing. Up next, Marissa Ryan joins me. We're going to go into the psychic realm. Don't touch your dial. She's next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast for a couple hours. We're going to be talking about the psychic world. Marissa Ryan began communicating with spirits 11 years ago when she was awakened by the spirit of a murder victim. We'll get into that. Her psychic abilities have led her to work with law enforcement on murder and missing person cases, featured on television, radio, and documentaries. She is a level 5 certified research medium. And welcome to Coast, Marissa Ryan. Marissa, how are you? Good evening.
I'm great, George. Thank you so much for having me on.
Oh, my pleasure. Now, what is a level 5 certified research medium?
Well, Winbridge Institute is an institute in Arizona where Dr. Julie Beschel has actually designed it's a scientific study. It's a huge organization where they really study life after death. It's the human potential in every aspect, but one of the biggest aspects they use is the spirit. And they actually, I don't know if you're familiar with Gary Schwartz.
Yes, much so.
Dr. Beschel used to work with Gary, and she has actually taken over and started another research center. And I'm a research medium. One day I decided I had worked with her when she was with Gary and then went over when she founded the Winbridge Institute and decided, you know, I really wanted to go through the testing and just out of my own curiosity. And I wanted to be a part of it because I thought it was so fascinating. And the testing and proof of life after death and to actually put us through tests. And we've had to go through, actually, there's about 12 different levels of testing. But a level 5 at this moment is the highest level you can get. And we actually go through blind studies where we have to do readings over the phone with people. We can't hear a voice. We're not given information. We literally just go into the spirit world and give the information. So we have to do lots of blind studies and testing, and they're constantly testing our levels and our accuracy and our getting validation and all of that. It's very, very interesting work.
Now, 11 years ago, tell me what happened to you, Marissa.
Wow, that was kind of the beginning of a life-changing experience. You know, my mother and my niece died tragically 2 days apart on Thanksgiving, and it was the first real death in my life, and I really just wanted to know what happened. Like, do we still live? Do we still go on? I had never had a psychic experience in my life, and I kind of started researching and doing some studying, but you know, a year went by and I kind of went on with my life. And then all of a sudden I was put in a position, somebody I knew had, somebody from where I used to live had passed. And it was a girl that was in our neighborhood. And I had moved like 40 miles away and she had died. She was murdered. And a friend of mine from the old neighborhood said, you know, do you remember this girl? And sent me the article of this girl. And I said, no, I don't remember this at all. And I don't remember her or anything about it. And then I was reading this email, and when I closed out my computer, I heard my name being called, and I thought it was one of my kids. When I turned around, the literally, I want to say disembodied figure of this murder girl was standing in front of me. And I have to tell, I mean, first it's like, well, why? Why me?
Why
and
you? Yeah.
I really have to credit it to the fact that I really kind of wanted to find out how my niece died. So I had been saying, why can't I talk to, you know, her in spirit? And it was kind of like, okay, well, you're, you know, here you, this is what you want. We're going to go ahead and grant it for you. But not, I didn't think it would be coming in such a gruesome way. But I don't know why she picked me. I just know that she was standing there completely dripping in blood. At first, I thought I was kind of losing my mind until it got so in depth with everything she was showing me, and she was showing me her entire murder and everything that happened to her, and letting me, I was like floating above her in the scene and watching it and discussing what she felt. And at the end of it, I was in so much shock. I feel in shock sometimes when I even still talk about it again, that I was in so much shock. I was like, I don't even know what to do with this.
Was it like watching a movie, Marissa?
It was like watching a movie of a girl with her arms and legs and her head being cut off.
Oh, my God.
And she was completely mutilated, and she's showing me every bit of this. And I'm thinking, why are you showing me something that's so brutal? And all I can think of is to get my attention, and boy, did it. And I said, I don't even know if this is real. I just remember going to bed and saying, I don't want to see this anymore. I don't want to hear this anymore. And all I know is when I woke up, she was standing at the foot of my bed. She's like, I'm not going away. And she kept saying, you have to call the police, and you have to call them. And so I'm like, what am I going to say to them?
Exactly. First of all, they'll think you're the suspect.
Well, let me tell you, that's kind of what happened. So what I did was, after I couldn't get rid of her, I finally went back to the article that I had seen, and I called the police. And I remember they weren't there, and I left him a voicemail message, and I said, you're going to think I'm crazy, but I want you to know I've spoke to this girl that is a murder victim in a case that you're working on. And 30 minutes later, they called me back. Oh, hi.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, well, what did she say?
And that's right. Can we come see you? They probably said, huh?
Well, at first they thought I was just a crank call. And I said, all I can tell you is she told me to tell you that you haven't found her head yet.
And this is probably information that the public did not know.
Correct. Nothing was disclosed of anything except for that part of her had been found, but they didn't say which part. And there were many different parts found in different areas, but many were still missing. And they said, well, we want to meet with you. So I met with them in the shopping center parking lot, and I got out of my car. And
why a shopping center parking lot? Why not like invite them over to your place?
They didn't offer. They wanted to meet me out in public.
That's interesting.
I have no idea why. And I just remember that they had a file in their hands with this huge picture of me and all this information about me in it.
They probably had sharpshooters aimed at you. You know, I'm not kidding.
Well, I don't think, I got to tell you, I had a one-year-old baby.
Hold, Hold on for a second. Hold on for a second. We're going to, geez, the baby was with you. We're going to talk more about this incredible story, see what you were able to confirm as we talk more about the psychic realm. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, and of course, Marissa Ryan with us for a couple hours. Marissa, let's pick up the story. So you're meeting the police in the parking lot of a shopping center talking about this murdered girl whose spirit has visited you. What happens?
Well, the first thing they wanted to do is ask me all about myself and my family, and I told them I was married. They wanted to know what my husband did, and they were very skeptical. They weren't sure who I was or how I knew what I knew. And so I told them, I said, you know, you don't have to believe me. I'm going to tell you this murder girl is sitting in my car right now. She wants me to drive you to a location. And they're like, okay. So they got in their car. I got in my car and they followed me. And we drove about 25 miles up the road. And I just went wherever she said. And we pulled off over on this one street. And I'd never been there before. She told me to pull over to the right. And it was kind of a park kind of area with a stream down on the right. Very woodsy. And we got out of the car and I said, she says this is where you found part of her. And they said maybe. And they didn't want to tell me anything.
They wouldn't commit to you.
Okay. Yeah, I'm frustrated at this point. So next thing I know, I can hear her calling me and she's saying, you know, look. And so I start walking around and I'm looking, thinking maybe I'm gonna find something. And they finally said, hey, listen, we'll tell you, we did find parts of her here in trash bags. There were parts. And I told them what the parts were. She said, I'll tell you exactly what the parts were and what the trash bag looked like. And they said, well, we want to take you to another area. So we drove back another probably 20 miles back towards that shopping center and off to this ravine and pulled over. And they said, well, what do you get here? And when I looked down the ravine, I saw her body. But it wasn't really her body. It was her body, the imprint of the, where her body was. And they said, well, yes, this is where we found her torso. And I said, I don't know what to do about all this. I'm just giving you the information that she's giving. And I said, I don't know who did this. I said, but I will continue to communicate with her. So they were not telling me much. They weren't validating anything. So we kind of parted ways. They said, you tell us everything that you find out from her. If you find something, don't touch it. Call us. And I'm like, okay. At this point, I want to get to the bottom of it. So I go home, and of course, I think I'm a little nutty. My husband thinks I'm a little nutty. I don't know what's happening.
And at this point, Marissa, you've learned her name and things like that?
I knew her name. I knew that she had just had a baby a week before her death. She was young. She had told me all this information, but I had saw their faces when she showed me the murder. And so she told me, you need to get out and sketch it. So I started doing what at the time I didn't realize was automatic writing, but I started automatic writing with her and I was getting all this information, details about the murder, details about the weapon, details about, you know, who they were. I mean, everything like their profile, their personalities, what kind of work they did. To the point where I wasn't a good sketch artist, but I sketched the three men. Well, the one detective said, here's my fax number. Anything you get from her, fax me. So I, all of a sudden, I go home and I fax over. I actually was at the pediatrician's office with my child, and I'm sketching on my son's homework. Okay, so I get home. I'm faxing over these pictures.
Mm-hmm.
He calls me on the phone, and he says, I want to tell you something. He said, we think we know the three men that did this. And he said,
wow.
And they're identical to the three men you sketched, down
now,
to the acne scars.
Did they suspect three men before you did this?
They already suspected that there were possibly three men, and they even at this point kind of knew who they were, but they didn't tell me that.
And you, of course, had no idea there were three men until this started happening.
Oh, I didn't know anything about the murder. I just was going by whatever she was telling me.
Okay.
So I start working with them for a while on this case, and I'm out literally searching, thinking, I'm going to find this girl's head, and I'm going to put this to rest. And months I spent doing this, and I didn't find it. and I was frustrated to the point. But what really got me was 2 weeks after this girl showed up in my home, she told everybody on the other side I could hear her and I could see her and speak to her. And all of a sudden, I got people riding in my car with me. And they're following. I got spirits riding in my car and following me around the mall. I was a sales rep at the time. I was a mom of three. I had spirits riding and following me everywhere. So now, not only can I not get rid of her, but I can't get rid of them. And they're really starting to, bug me. I mean, they're very persistent. And
they're like Whoopi Goldberg in Ghost, where they need to channel to you or something.
It was exactly that. They would sit in the back of my car and say, you've got to call this person. Call her. They were giving me phone numbers. And then, of course, I'm kind of naive at this point. I'm calling people I don't know. I'm going into stores and I'm talking to managers and I'm saying, did your brother die in a fire? He's standing behind you and there's smoke coming out of his head,
God.
You know?
And these people believe you or they thought you were nuts?
No, they believe me because I'm telling them all these details and I didn't even know how I was getting the details.
All right, let's get into the murdered girl and wrap up that case. So what happened? Did you find the suspects? Did you find the head?
What happened is, did not find the head. I got tired of being consumed with it. I said, I can't work on this anymore. I took a break and it transferred over to helping the spirit world. Okay. I get a call. This is 11 years ago. She comes to me about 3 months ago, shows up, and I'd talked to her over the years. She comes to me and says, revenge is sweet. I said, well, what do you mean? She said, one down, two to go. And I didn't know what she was talking about. A week later, I get a phone call from the detective from 11 years before. He'd retired. He was now a private eye.
Okay.
He calls me and he says, I want to meet with you. I want to open the case and see if you'll work on it with me again. So we meet for breakfast. He tells me I had them numbered suspect 1, 2, and 3. At this point, he had never validated anything really for the case until he brought the photos. He brought the case file to me. And when he pulled out the photos of the men and I had my sketches with me, it was really an eye-opening moment.
Did they just about match up?
It was identical.
Wow.
But what really got me was he said suspect number one was just killed in a motorcycle accident.
She and pushed him.
That's when she said to me, one down, two to go.
Yeah. Did they ever end up arresting the other two?
One of them failed the polygraph, and they know he's actually still working on him. The thing that's the difficult part is they need this girl's head and they need the murder weapon.
So these two are still out there, you're saying? These two suspects?
As far as I know, they're still out there. One of them's had trouble with the law, but I am just now beginning the investigation because I am now going to call in the suspect number one that died and said, spill the beans.
Now, let me ask you, Marissa, aren't you a little concerned about yourself if these two thugs, these two low-life murderers are out there and they know, do they know about you?
As far as I know, they don't know about me.
Going to after this show, for crying out loud.
I'm hoping that they don't listen to your show. Not that I want to have anyone not listen to your show, but.
But the cops have their names. They know who they are.
Exactly.
They're just trying to build enough evidence on them.
It's really, if you've got no witnesses, you've got to have a murder weapon, and that's
What was the murdered woman's first name?
Becky.
Becky. Now, did Becky ever tell you what the motive was, why they killed her?
The motive was money, drugs, and one other part that I don't want to disclose.
All right. Was she involved in the drugs?
Yes. She was a very naive girl that was messed up with some people that were not good.
Did she know them?
She did know them, and suspect number one was a very high-profile attorney.
The one who fell off the motorcycle?
Yes.
What city was this?
This was in L.A. County.
Okay. Amazing story. So, to this date, as I want to move into some of these other things that have happened to you, but to this date, then, there are two of three suspects. One is, the third is dead, the first one you called. Two are still alive. They're still out there. And Are police still, like, trying to get evidence on them?
It's really kind of an open case that they're not working on. I mean, this has been 11 years. But he's now reopening it privately because it's really bothered him. And so now that I've got one of them who's deceased, I'm thinking, why not tell me where her body is? Why not her head? Why not, you know, what does he have to lose now?
Yeah. Okay. So
I'm getting ready to go into some channeling with him.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. This work that you do, have you ever been attacked by a spirit? I mean, has anything negative ever happened to you?
You know, that's a great question. I really stay away from negativity. I have a very powerful personality, and I don't put up with anything negative. I've come across a lot of negative spirits. I've definitely had my share of them, but they pretty much stay away from me. I've had that have come into my home, and I've had to really work on getting them out of here because of my own family. But I have not been attacked. I have not.
Right,
I've been
now,
scared a few times, and I don't scare easy.
What scared you, if you can tell us that story?
I do private spirit circles at people's homes over the years, and I did have one where I'd gone to, it was a group of ladies, and one of the ladies' father had molested her.
Yeah.
And he passed, and he never apologized. He never really owned up to it until in the spirit circle when he really spilled it all, and to her and everyone. But he was really still kind of a sick person as a spirit, which was shocking to me because at the time I was kind of new at this. He followed me. He sat in my car. He wouldn't leave my car. Followed me all the way home. And I have a daughter. And I found it very difficult to keep him out of my house.
That's creepy.
It was really creepy. There was doors slamming. My daughter is very sensitive to spirits. She's been afraid her whole life. It's really been something we've battled. And it took me a good probably week and a half to really get him to understand he wasn't allowed here. That was really scary at first.
Did you get rid of him?
I finally got rid of him, yes. Luckily, I've got a lot of good friends on the other side that helped.
Yeah, I think you do. Now, some of these spirits now, when you said that they are all trying to get you to help them, I mean, are they coming at you like crazy?
Well, they used to. At the beginning, I was so open and so naive and yet excited about this gift and opportunity that I was just completely an open book, and they were all just coming at me constantly and, I mean, interrupting my entire life. And it took me probably about 6 months to finally learn that I had to control it. I had to shut it down. I had to have a switch that I could turn off. That has been amazing, and now I have no problem shutting that off. They still can get in the way, and every now and then. So they're not constantly going after me. They realize that they've got to play by my rules, or I won't help them at all.
Now, when you talk about how you try to stay away from negativity,
yes,
do you still have demons try to get through that door, that psychic door?
You know, I will be 100% honest, because I am usually always honest about this. I have really don't know if I have come face to face with a demon before. I don't really acknowledge that terminology in my life. Like, I don't allow any of that energy to be there in front of me. But I have come across some really, really scary things that about a year after I started doing this, I was coming off an off-ramp of a freeway, and I was waiting at a light to turn left, and a guy was coming on the other street, and he was turning in front of me, and he was kind of in this, it almost looked like a government car. It was like the white four-door sedan, and he was in a suit, and he looked over at me with this look of, I'm watching you. And I feel so odd even saying this, but his entire face changed. It almost looked lizard-like. It was evil. I didn't know if it was extraterrestrial. I didn't know if it was demonic. I just knew that the look was, we're watching you. And that's how I felt. And I felt it wasn't a good watching you, hey, we're your cheerleaders, let's go. It was, we're watching you, we know what you're doing, and we don't like it.
Wow. Huh?
And that scared me. That really, really did scare me. And I never saw it again.
Well, now, when you do what you do, because you do these spirit readings, right?
Yes, lots of them.
Do they, I mean, you remember ghosts, right? How they come into your life.
Yes.
And they, you know, they would try to enter Whoopi's body to communicate. Does that happen to you?
It's happened to me a few times. I'm kind of I like to be in control, so I don't like for that to happen. But there's been times when I've been doing readings and I've actually had them come into my body and almost try and like fight. I can't stay awake. Like they're fighting to take over. I feel like it's more of for a communication reason. I know that I've had clients and even family tell me during sessions that my face changed, my voice changed, everything, all my mannerisms changed. I turned into a Native American man, or I turned into a woman that was like very young, angelic, and different. I've had accents, but I don't remember it when I come out, and then I'm a little irritated because I don't like it.
You can't control it, can you?
I have not been at, well, I can control, usually say this is not going to happen if I feel something coming on, but there were times when they took over and I couldn't control it. And it was a lot like the Whoopi Goldberg, get out of here, you know? I teach classes, and my sister-in-law decided to take a class, and I was teaching her how to do spirit communication with another student, and she was bringing in this woman's mother, and all of a sudden, she was getting all the symptoms the woman died from. She couldn't breathe, and she turned white as a ghost, and she couldn't breathe, and she was almost falling to the floor, and I had to grab her and shake her, and then all of a sudden, she snapped out of it, and she had, that really scared her. She didn't take a class again.
What would you say to somebody, Marissa, who doesn't believe in the afterlife? And there are a lot of people who don't. I mean, I talked to some yesterday here in St. Louis, where I am for another week. They don't believe in the afterlife. They think this is it. You die, and, you know, they're going to make it the best life they can, but they don't think there's anything else out there. What do you tell them?
You know, what I tell them is I completely understand, because I was the same way. I was brought up with not a lot of religious beliefs, and I was hopeful, but I really didn't know for sure. But it wasn't until this happened to me, in the years of proof and evidence and investigation that I have received, has been so amazing that you cannot deny it. And I just tell them, you know, you have to just be open. And if you want to believe what you want to believe, that's okay. But you really need to be open to the possibilities. The answers and the memories are really within us. We have to really look, though.
Does it bother you that some people don't believe?
Not at all. Not at all.
To each his own, I guess.
They just haven't woke up yet. And
no.
That's okay if they don't believe. Usually it's fear of the unknown. I've had people that didn't believe, but they've come and told me all these spirit stories of spirits getting in touch with them and things moving, and they'll say, but I don't believe in that. And it's they're afraid of what they can't control.
Well, I tell you what, it's something else. And, you know, I've always believed that there's something on the other side. There was a split moment. I doubted it, but I've always believed. We're going to come back, talk more about what you do with your students, and we'll take phone calls. Final hour ahead with Marissa Ryan as we talk about the psychic realm on Coast to Coast AM.